Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, and thank you so much for tuning in to today's episode of Just Us Talks with Tisha. I am your host, Tisha Hillman. I am here each and every Wednesday from 10 to 10:30, telling you everything that you want to know and probably some things you don't want to know about the law, politics, social justice, and maybe how all of these things kind of fit together sometimes. So there is always so much going on, you guys, in our news that just gives us anxiety, you know, maybe a little bit of depression, some concern. And this week is certainly no different. And if you guys have been tuning in to my show for any period of time, you know that every single week we talk about some of the things that are going on in our country that could potentially be causing problems, and not just as a country, but just on an individual basis as well, because we all know, if you've ever listened to my show, that when it comes to the law and it comes to things that are happening in our country, these things are often intertwined. And so this week, if you've been tuning in to what's going on in politics, you know that Jared Kushner, who is this current president's son-in-law, married to Ivanka Trump, and he happened to lose his security clearance, which is very, very interesting because he shouldn't have had a security clearance in the first place, because if you guys have been paying attention at all to anything, one of the issues with this administration is that there are many people that are working in the White House that cannot actually get the security clearance for which they have the level of information. So, for example, Jared Kushner has access to secret information, secret security clearance level information, but he could not actually pass the background check needed in order to secure a secret security clearance. So one of the problems was that he lied on the application. He lied about his meetings with Russia, and he lied on other government documents. And by virtue, he was actually unable to secure a security clearance. But that did not stop this administration from allowing Mr. Kushner to have secret level security type information. So that's very, very problematic. And you guys know that I talk a lot about this stuff because there are such huge implications in all of this, because we talk about our democracy in this country, and our democracy is certainly, if not completely eroded by some of the things done in this administration, it certainly should be something that should give us all pause. One of the other things that is in constant rotation is the gun debate. And we talked a little bit about this last week. Every time there is any type of mass shooting, there becomes this issue as it pertains to the gun debate. And the most interesting thing that I found this week is that, you know, since we know that the NRA has huge pockets and they essentially control large segments of our government, specifically the GOP, because of the donations that they give to the GOP has basically been rendered mute because, you know, they refuse to ever speak up about the issues as it pertains to any sort of gun regulations, any sort of reform, anything of that sort, because of the dollars that they get from the GOP, I'm sorry, from the NRA. And so because of that, they really have a noose on our government. And folks, that is certainly something that is problematic. It's something that has huge implications when it comes to our democracy and how our democracy actually works. Because if we're talking about a democracy as it's supposed to perform, where you have the voting population voting for its leaders and voting for the representatives, you're not going to have that when you have something like a corporation that can essentially strangle our Constitution because of the level of donations that they can make, and then thereby effectively running our government. And one of the things that happened this week that just showed that to me ever so clearly was Delta Airlines. So there have been many, many organizations and many sponsors that have pulled out of its support for the NRA. And, you know, so when they're losing sponsors, you know, obviously they're losing money. And so because of that, what's happened is Delta Airlines recently decided that they were pulling out its support for the NRA. And the Republicans in Georgia, which is where the hub for Delta Airlines in Atlanta is located, they decided that, well, if Delta Airlines decides that they're going to pull out its support for the NRA, then we are going to pull out any funding that we, any tax benefits, anything that we give to Delta Airlines. Now, folks, if you don't understand what that means that we have a problem. Because if you have a private organization that is Delta Airlines, that makes a decision, a PR decision, which is what it is because of this huge debate. So they've made a PR decision for its company and for its shareholders to not support another private company, and then our government steps in and decides to punish the company for not supporting another private company, we have a problem. We have a problem in this country. And again, until we are really ready to admit it, folks, nothing is going to change. And what is happening in Florida since the Parkland shooting is people are tired, right? You have kids now that are standing up to the NRA and standing up to our elected officials. And I think it's great because these are going to be our future leaders. And so these kids have stood up and they've decided that they're not going to tolerate this anymore because they don't want to have to go to school with bulletproof backpacks. I was talking to a friend of mine yesterday, and he was talking about an article that he recently read about the surge in sales for bulletproof backpacks. And that's really, really sad and a scary time in this country if we are worried, if our children have to worry about going to school with bulletproof backpacks because they're worried that they might be executed in their place of learning. And so, you know, someone needs to stand up to the GOP who refuses to stand up to the NRA, even though these people are our elected representatives. It's clear that they are only beholden to the NRA because of the large amount of money they receive from the NRA. And folks, if you think that this is just about the Second Amendment, this is nothing. This has nothing to do with the Second Amendment. That is just the guise under which they decide to amass, you know, their powers by saying that, oh, this is about our constitutional rights, and it's not. It's not. This is about a corporation that wants more guns on the street because that's how they make their money. And so they give money to make sure that they continue to make money. And so the other thing, of course, is talking about arming our teachers. And so let's talk for a second about how stupid that is. So, again, has nothing to do with the Second Amendment, even though they will keep saying, yes, this is about constitutional rights. However, when the NRA comes in and says, yes, the answer is put more guns out there, This is all about their bottom line and all about our elected officials that are owned by these people that are saying, yes, let's do that, because they get more money back from the NRA if they're able to pass these kind of regulations. And so one of the debates in all of this has been, I think it was 4 armed guards that were outside of the school that did not act, that did not run into the school. And so now there's all this backlash from armed officers deciding that they did not want to be in harm's way. And so they did not react and they did not go into the school. And so now people are calling them cowards and all these kinds of things. And the interesting thing about that to me is, one, that the NRA never, ever says a word when an unarmed black person is shot in this country. Or take, for example, Philando Castile. Philando Castile worked in a school. He had a license to carry. His weapon was in the vehicle. He let the officer know that he had a license. He let the officer know that that his weapon was in the vehicle. And as he was reaching for the driver's license that the officer asked for, he was executed. The NRA said nothing. You would think, if this was really about the Second Amendment, folks, you would think that that would be the prime example for the NRA to speak up for the rights of gun owners. But they don't. They have this way of being silent when it comes to the Second Amendment rights of people of color. And so when you're talking about officers not running into a school because maybe they are afraid for their safety when a teenager is armed, but yet no one says anything to call them cowards. As a matter of fact, they're considered heroes when they unload clips on unarmed black people for whom they say they are afraid. Then they're heroes. So they're heroes when they unload and murder unarmed people, but then they're cowards when they don't confront armed teenagers. Folks, we have a problem in this country, and until someone is really willing to say what that problem is, the problem is going to continue. And it's something that is multi-layered, and so there probably needs to be a multi-layered approach to solving the problem. But, you know, the purpose of this show is not to solve all of the ills of this country, but simply to bring awareness to our listeners to how all of these things impact our very rights and our laws in this country. And sometimes, as an attorney, it can be very, very challenging to see all of these things play out and to know that this is my country and these are the rights that I don't actually have, even though I took an oath to protect these rights, even though I don't really have these rights and neither do people who look like me. And we have to really address the hypocrisy that stems from situations like this, or I should say that are really exposed in situations like this, folks. But enough about that. You know, I do want to know what you guys think about this particular issue. If you want to chime in, please call 215-383-3872. Again, that's 215-383-3872. Now, in the law, specifically when it comes to issues of custody, I spoke about this issue not too long ago because it's something that was a change in the law in the state of Maryland about, you know, a little less than 2 years ago. And before this case, it's called the Conover case, and before the Conover case, came down through the Court of Appeals. If you were a third party, and usually it was grandparents, right? Because, you know, a lot of times grandparents take a huge role, sometimes more of a role than the parents do, in raising children. And so when grandparents wanted to challenge the natural parents for custody, they had to overcome a hurdle. And that hurdle was really an issue of parental unfitness. So before you could be on the level, on the same level in the law as a natural parent, the natural parent has to be essentially be found to be unfit, or there has to be some sort of extraordinary circumstance, right, for which a non-natural parent or a third party could challenge a parent for custody. So as of 2016, the Conover case, which stemmed from a same-sex couple who were getting a divorce, and it was a lesbian couple. And the reason that's important is because one of the partners actually gave birth to the child, and the other partner did not actually adopt the child, right? And so that's one of the issues as the law catches up with science and all sorts of discoveries and advancements in science, the law has to catch up. And it's way, way behind. But at least in the Conover case, same-sex couples were at least placed on equal footing to where they could actually challenge the other partner for custody. So, you know, in a situation where you have, you know, not just a same-sex couple, but if you are trying to challenge a natural parent for custody, which is what happened in the Conover case, now you don't have to necessarily be seen as a third party in the ways that you used to with respect to the so-called grandparents' rights statute in Maryland, which there really is no grandparents' rights statute, but there were these extraordinary circumstances that you had to overcome, as I stated before. So because of the Conover case, if you can prove that you are what is considered to be a third-party de facto parent, then you would be on equal footing with the natural parent for custody. So what that means in layman's terms is, say, for instance, I am a step-parent, right? And, you know, I am married to someone and I am raising their child as my own. And all of a sudden, we decide that we're going to split up, and now I am going to challenge this person for custody. In order to be on the same level and challenge a natural parent for custody, what the court considers and what the burden of proof is that the petitioner has to prove is that, first, that the biological or the adoptive parent consented to, and not only consented to, but they fostered your formation and establishment of the parent-like relationship with the child. And so the first step is, did the natural parent or the adoptive parent consent to your relationship with the formation of the parent-like relationship with the child? And did they foster that relationship? And so, you know, one of the things that that I was concerned about when this case first came out was, you know, third-party people like nannies and godparents and things like that. You know, basically anybody coming out the woodwork and challenging a natural parent for custody and actually being successful. But some of the other factors that the court considers, I think, makes this issue a little bit more narrow and thereby excludes some of those other third-party interlopers, if you will. And so the second factor that the court considers is whether or not the petitioner and the child live together in the same household. So obviously, if you are not living together, if the biological parent or the adoptive parent didn't consent to and foster your formation of the relationship as the child's, you know, as a parent-like figure in the child's life, then you would not be considered de facto, having de facto parent status. Now, the third factor is that the petitioner assumed the obligations of parenthood, for instance, taking significant responsibilities for the child's care, as would a parent. And some of those things would be like the child's care, their education, their development, you know, who takes the child to school, who feeds the child, do you do these things, do you help the child with their homework, do you contribute to the child's support, and do you do all of these things without the expectation of financial compensation? And folks, the reason that's important is because, think about it, if you have someone who is, you know, if you have a child that's being raised primarily by someone like an au pair or a nanny, this person would, on some level, have grounds to challenge the natural parent for custody under the new Conover law. However, because usually these people actually work for compensation or something that equates to compensation, so whether it be room and board or whatever it may be, there's some sort of quid pro quo for those services. It's not something that is just done because you have established and fostered this relationship with the child as such that you no longer expect some sort of consideration for the services, right? So that would take out these third parties and anyone else who would expect financial compensation. Now, it's not to say that you actually are given financial compensation, but it's without expectation of compensation. And the fourth thing that the court considers is whether the petitioner has been in that parental role for a length of time that is sufficient to establish with the child a bondant, dependent relationship that is parental in nature. So this kind of harkens back to me, you know, the first premise in the rule is that, you know, there was a formation of this relationship, but the difference is that this one is not necessarily about whether or not the natural parent or the adoptive parent consented to and fostered the relationship and allowed this relationship to be established and formed. But this is more so about the length of time that this has been going on. And so, you know, it doesn't really say whether that's 1 year, 2 year, 3 years. There's not a hard and fast rule on what that length of time is, but it's just that it's a length of time that's sufficient to have established this bond with the child so that the child is now bonded and dependent on this person and a parental nature. And so this, folks, is to me what I see as a gift and a curse, right? It's a gift in a situation where a same-sex couple, as it was in this instant case that brought us the rule, it is in situations of, you know, step-parents or things like that, and maybe even in grandparent situations. But one of the problems with the law, and I believe that at least in the state of Maryland that this is something that needs to be changed, say, for instance, I have an issue with you. If I'm a step-parent or, you know, I fall into you potentially into the category of a de facto parent, and I have an issue with you, and I go to the court, and I, you know, maybe file an emergency petition for custody, and I get custody of, your child. Now, sometimes it takes a while for cases to get through the system. Now, what if it takes so long? And I've had a case like this, actually. What if it takes so long for the case to get through the system that now it's been a substantial length of time to where this bond has been established? Now, of course, all of the other factors have to be taken into consideration as well. So if during that time the biological parent is fostering this relationship, you know, then obviously that's an issue. But sometimes when it comes to the court, if your child is with someone for a period of time and you don't foster the relationship, that comes back to be a ding, if you will, in your column. Because it's, you know, well, you're not doing the best, you're not doing what's in the best interest of the child if you're not fostering this relationship for the child to adapt. So that's why I consider this to be a gift and a curse, folks, because it's almost as if natural parents can be challenged for custody, but the law is not really helping them out in fighting that if it's not something that is legitimate, right? And that's the issue that I have with this case. Like I said, I think it's a victory for same-sex couples and for people that are essentially in this situation, and it's a real situation. But if you have someone that could potentially be bitter and jaded and against you, and I've seen this kind of stuff, and that's what gives me pause. But either way, it is now the law in Maryland. And so, folks, if you have any questions about Conover versus Conover, if you have any questions about third-party rights, grandparents' rights, anything like that, be sure to give my office a call, because we do this kind of stuff all the time, and we're obviously very, very up-to-date with what the new laws are in the state of Maryland. So you can certainly reach us by phone at 301-744-7996. You can also follow us on Twitter at TS Hillman Law. And also, please be sure to like our Facebook page, also at TS Hillman Law. And folks, thank you so much for tuning in. Thank you for your support over the last year and some months that we have been doing this blog talk show. And don't forget that each and every first Friday of the month, you can tune in to 95.9 FM here in the Maryland, Washington, D.C. area to listen to us on the Marketing Pulpit Radio Show. And that is at 10:30, from 10:30 to 11:30 on 95.9 FM and also 1450 AM, Washington, D.C., Maryland. But in the meantime, folks, tune in next week. Same bat time, same bat channel. But until next week at 10 o'clock, folks, just remember that when it comes to the law and it comes to justice, sometimes justice is just us. Thanks, folks. Tune in next week.